Cary O'Byrnes is an actor and playwright. His one-man show, Markings of the Soul, premiered off-Broadway in 1991 and was revived in 1998. The play tells the story of Cary and his gay brother Tim, an artist who died of AIDS. The boys grew up in New Jersey, sons of a working-class man. Judith Strasser asked Cary O'Byrnes for a thumbnail sketch of the man both brothers adored.
Well, I always worked two jobs, bricklayer and bartender and football coach.
You have a description in, well, you sort of act out your father in the play, and I'm wondering if you sort of could give us a sense of what the man was like.
Oh, sure. Winners never quit. Quitters never win. Winning's everything. Win. Get off your butt and get back in there and hit someone. Tackle like you've been taught. Head across the bow, stick your nose in there, wrap those arms and drive. Hit. Actually, he coached the peewee football in 7th and 8th graders. But he tried to instill in us discipline, character, a lot of qualities that I found essential for the rest of my life. And
you know, you and your brother were supposed to be tough guys, right? Football players, real he-men.
Yeah.
And what was Tim like?
Tim was a strong spirit. I mean, once he got bleed in something, he just would not let go. Nobody could convince him otherwise. He was headstrong, which everybody in my family was anyway, but he was just a strong-spirited person. Actually, in high school, he started getting involved in born-again Christian. We used to call him Jesus Freaks. They used to be in Atlantic City, and he used to go around preaching about Jesus, and he got involved in that. And then somewhere in high school, he came to terms with himself being homosexual, and between that, it just really split the family apart. And actually, he dropped out of high school, I think his junior year, and he was pretty much kicked out of the house because my dad wanted no part of his oldest son being like that, you know.
So Tim went off. He dropped out of high school, and then he moved to Georgia.
Actually, he dropped out of high school and he moved to Atlantic City, which is about 10 minutes from where we lived, and it's a big casino capital now. But he moved down there because there was a gay community down there, and he tried to pursue his art a little bit, and I think he lasted about a year or so, and he just eventually just ran away to Atlanta. He didn't know anybody in Atlanta. All he knew was that he wanted to be an artist, and he had his burning desire that he had to follow his dream, and so he ran away to Atlanta, and actually, I guess one of the few times I saw him before he ran away, I was teasing him. I was calling names, you know, and being derogatory to him. And he chased me around a block. I mean, you know, I started getting a big fight and all. But to me, it was all in a game. I never knew that I was not going to see him again for years and years.
Did your father ever make peace with Tim before your dad died?
Before he died, no. Actually, my brother flew in from Atlanta like 3 days before my dad died, and me and him, we went to the hospital every day, and she tried to make his peace. They'd sit there and talk, and my dad, he just wouldn't budge one inch. I mean, he was still angry, I guess whatever he was going through, angry, but he just wouldn't accept the fact that, I mean, my brother had he was gay, two, he's an artist. I mean, my dad, that's no way to make a living. You're never gonna make a living doing that. And so he never accepted that. He never accepted the fact that he was gay, and he never accepted the fact, a lot of things about him, I guess. By then, me and my brother started communicating again.
How'd that happen?
Well, after he went to Atlanta, it was about 5 years before we actually communicated. He wrote me a letter, actually. That's what started it all. He wrote me a letter. He was opening his first big art show, and he was just trying to share his joy with his family. And it was about the same time, actually, that I had a little accident, a construction job. I fell off a scaffolding. It was like 4 stories in the air, and that accident actually changed my life. And I started.
Why didn't you? You have a part of that in your play. Why didn't you?
I was making a couple thousand. I was first out of high school, making a couple $1,000 a week as a construction worker, and that was more money I could possibly spend. But I tried. I mean, I was kegs every weekend, partying every night. I was young. I was irresponsible. I was invincible. Just free as a bird, flying ever so much higher and higher and higher, and her speed and cocaine and acid and mushrooms and more and more. And I was no longer doing it because I wanted. I was doing it because I had no choice, but it didn't stop me. I wanted more and more. And it's time for a wake-up call. It's time to learn the price of freedom. It's a Friday afternoon, 3 p.m., payday. working on scaffolding four stories in the air, Resorts Casino. I'm moving a mortar pan while other laborers are raising the scaffolding to the next level. I'm thinking one thing, in a few hours, I'll be hitting that first line of coca. So I'm buzzing, moving too fast for that height, just keeping busy, not too busy to notice a plank being moved as I step back on it. Next thing I know, I was falling. I heard a scream. I struggled to break my fall. Then the free fall came, falling through the air with the concrete sidewalk ready to greet me in a few seconds. I thought of my life. What a waste. I suddenly realized in one split second that I was no longer free. The drugs had to be under their control. I just wanted one more chance to be free again, one more chance. Then, as I approached the bottom of the scaffolding, I felt peace. I felt loved. I felt assured that I would get another chance. I hit the last leg of the scaffolding and broke my fall. I landed on the concrete sidewalk, got up and walked away. What I do know is the first time in my life I truly felt the presence of a God, a loving and forgiving God. I felt that I had found a personal relationship with God. I quit the coke, speed, and hard drugs. I found peace of soul. I still hadn't learned how to love my brother, but I'd taken the first step. I learned to love myself.
How did you find out that your brother had AIDS?
I was living home, actually. I just moved home. And my brother's roommate called me. I remember I got a phone call from Hal, and he told me that Tim was in the hospital. And he told me he had pneumonia, and the doctors hadn't really diagnosed anything else. But he had seen a lot of his friends like that, and he says, I believe he has AIDS. So we flew down to Atlanta, we see him, and...
You have a scene in the...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Nobody wanted to believe that he was that sick. We all wanted to believe that he was... He had been working a lot, so we just kept telling ourselves that he just overworked himself. And we flew down to Atlanta. And all illusions of denial were shattered when my mom, my sister, and I entered my brother's room at Grady Memorial Hospital. We were greeted by Tim's words. I might as well tell you right now, I have AIDS. He had seen so many of his friends abandoned by their families that I guess he wanted us to know right away what we were getting ourselves into in case we decided not to be involved. It was too late. We had passed the point of not being involved. We decided to wait it out, hanging around the hospital every day hoping for his release, which was contingent upon his white blood cell count reaching a certain level. Now, I'd never heard of white blood cells before this, but now, every day I prayed for those little cells to make a comeback. Well, the days soon turned into weeks, and we took turns staying in Atlanta. I was in the midst of a two-week turn. I was driving my brother's old jalopy to the hospital on a blistering hot southern day. As his air conditioner started sputting out warm air, I started feeling dizzy and confused. What am I doing here? What's going on with my brother? I mean, all those emotions I had so neatly bottled up over the past few weeks were now coming out. I felt this incredible ball of rage in the pit of my stomach. As I pulled into the parking garage, the steering wheel seemed to be melting from the heat and the death grip which I had on it. I mean, the thought of entering that hospital again and seeing my brother so weak and myself so helpless was making me sick to my stomach. A mad rush of questions started flowing through my mind, and I could feel my eyes going blurry, my stomach churning, my heart pounding. What was happening with Tim? Why? Why now? The gap between what I knew and what I wanted to know was filled with confusion. What is this friggin' virus? What are people doing attaching morals to a virus? How does a virus know the difference between right and wrong? Why are we fighting each other instead of this virus? The questions kept coming as I maneuvered into a parking spot. I felt as I was about to pass out from the smell of the car and the heat, when all of a sudden a cool breeze blew into the window. I parked and heard the faint whispering of the radio. It was a familiar song. I turned the car off, the radio up, and sat there and listened to it. That's just the way it is. Some things will never change. So I released the steering wheel from my death grip, and that pit in my stomach began to unravel as I felt the anger slip away, and the void was replaced by acceptance. That's the way it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is. Prejudice, discrimination, so many levels of our society. Yeah, I was as guilty as anyone. So I asked myself, what are you going to do about it, kid? I can't change the world. I can only change myself. A week later, Tim was released from the hospital. His white blood cell count was on a rebound. I helped him get settled back home, and on the day before I was returned to New Jersey, we had lunch at his favorite outdoor cafe. He was looking amazingly good for what he had been through. I could see his energy was coming back. The conversation centered on how he's going to take care of himself now. He had a lot of friends in Atlanta, friends who'd do anything for him. But he was concerned that wouldn't be enough. What he really needed was somebody to be there all the time. Someone to go through this with him. Those blue eyes looked up at me, and I could sense what he was trying to say, so I asked him, "Hey, bro, what do you think of me moving out here to help you out?" He smiled back at me, and I knew I was moving to Atlanta.
Kerry O'Byrne says his days in Atlanta were the most bittersweet time of his life. He lost his brother Tim to AIDS in less than a year. Kerry went on to become an actor. The one-man show he created about the effects of AIDS on his family is called Markings of the Soul. Judith Strasser spoke with him.